Obviously, it's kind of difficult to go from that then into our regular study, but let's try to do this. I want us to turn over to James chapter 5 and verse 12. James chapter 5 and verse 12. Keep in mind, as we've seen, that James throughout this book, in a fashion very reminiscent of the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, just talks from topic to topic and moves around from topic to topic, coming back to various themes that he has addressed previously and giving more information or maybe some additional aspects to something he's already said. Well, earlier he had talked about the misuse of the tongue, and here in James chapter 5 and verse 12, he just gives a short admonition, just one verse, but it has to do with a particular aspect of speech, and that of swearing or making an oath, not in the sense sometimes of what we think of somebody cussing or using foul language in the sense of an oath or swearing, but here in the sense of confirming that one is telling the truth by appealing to God or appealing to something in connection with God, a higher power, in order to verify to people that one is being honest on this occasion. And that is the practice that James is addressing here in James chapter 5 and verse 12. So I want us to look at this and then look at some other New Testament passages that relate to it. James says, "But above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath. But your yes is to be yes, and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment." That's a very short statement, a short admonition, but one I think that is very, very important for us to think about. And I want us to talk about this, especially in light of maybe some misconceptions that people have about this. There's no question that James is emphasizing that we're to be honest all the time. We're always to tell the truth and not have to be a person where someone could only know if we're really being honest on this occasion by whether or not we preface our comments with an oath. If that's what it takes for somebody to believe you because your integrity is questionable or you only tell the truth when you give an oath, then that's a real, real problem. And this is the same thing that Jesus had addressed in his teaching, and we'll look at all of that. But I want us to kind of look at this from the broader perspective of the biblical teaching on swearing. Because I think sometimes people have some misconceptions about this and can maybe go to some extremes about some things. Without question, there are New Testament passages that criticize, that condemn the act of taking an oath. On various occasions, people taking oaths. We just read James chapter 5, verse 12, Matthew 5, and also Matthew 23, Jesus makes statements very similar to James' comments about taking an oath. For instance, Matthew chapter 5, this is in the midst of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where you may recall that he is discussing how the Pharisees and scribes would teach the people the law and their interpretations. And Jesus said what about the level of righteousness that the scribes and Pharisees were advocating? Anyone recall that? What do you think about the level of righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees? Well, right, but he said, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So it's in this context that he makes this statement, what the Pharisees have been teaching the people about the law of Moses and how to apply that in their lives. And Jesus' point throughout all these illustrations is that they're not really getting at the heart of the moral teaching of the law. So here in verse 33, here's another example that Jesus gives. Again, you have heard from the Pharisees that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil. Now I want us to come back to some of the particulars of this passage in a few more minutes, but I just want you to note up front that Jesus is obviously talking about common practice of the Jews in accordance with the teaching of the Pharisees that oaths are only binding upon you if they are joined with particular phrases that would make them binding, but then on other occasions that oath really isn't obligatory. It's not binding on you. And you don't have to feel the need to abide by what you are saying that you're going to do. So there are various examples here of obviously the Jews that were making oaths, and they would swear by one thing in association with God or themselves, and then swear by something else, and only some of those occasions would be considered binding, and the Pharisees were teaching that. So I'm going to come back to some of those particular examples in a moment, but the main thing I want us to see right now is that Jesus is saying, don't make those kinds of oaths. But rather, you let your yes be yes and your no, no, and anything beyond this is of evil. So here's certainly one passage where taking these oaths and swearing is condemned. But other passages in the New Testament condone this. And I want us to realize this. In fact, there are examples of biblical people who are making an oath. And so I think we have to be careful that we don't come to the conclusion that it's always necessarily sinful to be swearing or taking an oath. I don't think that's what Jesus is getting at. There are other passages that condone it. We'll look at these. In Hebrews 6:13, God swears and makes an oath in accordance with the practice of men. Galatians 1, Romans 9, we'll look at all of these. First of all, Hebrews 6, for when God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you. And so, having patiently waited, he obtained the promise. For men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is an end of every dispute. And the Hebrew writer then goes on to explain that God, in order to confirm his promise and make it absolutely emphatic that he was going to fulfill his promise, he swore to it. He swore by himself. So here's an example of where God makes an oath. There are just numerous examples of this in the Old Testament, in the Law of Moses, where you have oaths like this. Let me ask you a question. Did God make that oath because God sometimes doesn't tell the truth? No, why did God make that oath? Because he was accommodating, the Hebrew writer says, to men and the human practice of swearing in order to confirm before human beings that I'm telling the truth on this occasion. But now God was not giving an oath or swearing by himself on that occasion because sometimes God lies. But on this occasion, he wanted people to know he was telling the truth. No, that's not it. God always tells the truth. And that's the point the Hebrew writer goes on to make, that with God it's impossible for him to ever lie. And so he's swearing, but let me ask you this question. Is this kind of oath that God is swearing, or is the purpose behind that oath, is it the same purpose that you infer from the Pharisees and what they were advocating back in Matthew 5? I don't think so. With those Pharisees, they were saying, well, there are some times when you can swear and it's not binding on you. Other times it is, but sometimes it isn't. Well, that's clearly not God's intention here or God's purpose. But God certainly is swearing here by himself. A couple of other passages. Galatians 1. I mean, if Paul's not swearing before God that he's telling the truth here, then I don't know how to interpret it. This is where he's giving the defense of his apostolic calling. He is defending his own apostleship, that he did not just assume upon himself to teach these things. He didn't learn these things from a human being, but he received this apostolic commission from a revelation of Jesus Christ. And Paul says, now in what I'm writing to you, I assure you before God that I am not lying. So he's obviously calling God to bear witness that he is telling the truth in order to confirm to those people without question he's not lying about this. Or in Romans 9, a similar statement, I'm telling the truth in Christ, I'm not lying, my conscience testifies with me in the Holy Spirit that I have great sorrow and unceasing grief in my heart for unbelieving Jews. My point is simply this, before we go back and look in depth at some of these passages that are teaching against swearing, that there are examples in Scripture of swearing and giving oaths. God himself, God's people, and it's obviously something that is not viewed as sinful in these occasions. So I think what we have to do is we have to then look at specifically, okay, what is James getting at? And what was Jesus getting at? What kind of swearing, what kind of oath-taking are they talking about? And so I want us to look at this, but now I've kind of been talking here, and before we get into this in more depth, comments or questions about any of these other passages that we've looked at up to this point? Okay. Let's look over at Matthew 23. I think this will really help us understand even better what Jesus was getting at in his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. If you turn over to Matthew chapter 23, or you can look up here on the screen, it is just very obvious that the Jews at this time, in accordance with the Pharisees' teaching, are creating a situation where when you would make oaths or vows at God's temple, then on some occasions those vows were binding on you, but other occasions that they weren't. And it became almost a semantic issue. Well, what words did you actually use when you vowed this to God? And if you didn't use the exact words that the Pharisees were saying were binding or made it binding, well, then it really wasn't binding. And this is what Jesus is condemning, because it creates a scenario where you can promise something, you can vow something, and yet not feel obligated to keep your word. Jesus says, woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple is obligated. You fools and blind men, which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? And, you say, whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing. But whoever swears by the offering on it, he is obligated. You blind men, which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? Therefore, whoever swears by the altar swears both by the altar and by everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears both by the temple and by him who dwells within it. And whoever swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it. Now let's just see if we can't understand what's the scenario here that Jesus is addressing. What occasion would it be when a Jew would come to the temple and make an oath before God? When would that occur? When would he make an oath, or when would he make a vow? Back in Matthew 5, Jesus spoke of vows. When would he make a vow, or what would be the occasion? I've stumped you already. How about that? You ever heard of a votive offering? A votive offering? Yeah, the members here have heard of a votive offering because we've talked about that. We've talked about the law of Moses. Talked about votive offerings. In fact, the law of Moses talks about them in Leviticus. Anyone recall what a votive offering was in the Mosaic system? Stumped you again. Okay. It's when a Jew would come to the temple, and God's law said a Jew could come to the temple and make a vow as he would plead for God to do something for him. Like, let's say that a person was wanting to pray to God and beg God to give him a good crop next year. And a person then might make a vow and say, God, if you will answer my prayer and give me a good crop next year, I'm not going to just give you the normal tenth that your law requires. I vow to you that I'm going to make it a 20th of my crop that I will give to the sanctuary. Or let's say that a Jew, a woman was barren, hadn't been able to have any children, so maybe she and her husband might vow to God, Lord, if you will give us a child, then we will, give 50 sheep, in sacrifice or something. Or we will serve at your sanctuary for a month. That kind of thing is what the law of Moses talked about a Jew doing all the time. And in fact, you might even turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. And here's the teaching that the author of Ecclesiastes, whom I would regard to be Solomon, gives about such vows, such votive offerings. Verse 4, when you make a vow to God, this is Ecclesiastes 5, verse 4, when you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hand? Can you appreciate what's going on here? He's talking about people who have made these vows. They have made these votive offering vows. And yet, when the crop came in, they decided that, man, we really need all this. I can't afford to give a 20th to God. But you vowed it. Well, I know, but it was a mistake. I didn't know at the time it was going to be this tough. Or my wife is pregnant. That's wonderful. But I promised God I'd offer 50 sheep. Well, I don't have 50 sheep. I'd have to go out and buy. I got 40. I have to go out and buy 10 more. I don't have the money. It's going to make it really hard on us. I'll just give God 40 sheep. But you vowed 50. Well, but it was a mistake. I didn't mean to. And of course, what Solomon is saying here is, listen, you vowed to do something. Don't say afterward, well, I didn't anticipate it was going to happen this way or that way. And so then when the messenger comes and says, okay, pay your vow, you say, well, I'm not going to pay it. And so he said, don't do that. It's better not to vow. You don't have to vow, but if you're going to vow that offering to God, you better pay it. So here's a very strong teaching in the Old Testament about when you make a vow, you better keep it. All right, but do you see now what the Jews of Jesus' day had done with this? How can you get around, or seemingly get around, the fact that you made that vow to God? Well, when you were a kid, did you ever... It wasn't really a game, I don't guess. It was really reality. Promise you're going to do something, and then somebody comes back to you, and what did we as kids say made our promise not really binding on us? Well, I have my fingers crossed. And we get really, really good at that, Somehow if you had your fingers crossed, well, I said it, but somehow that, that meant it wasn't really, really binding. Or another thing that we sometimes do as human beings, this is what the Jews were doing, is, well, I didn't actually promise it. I mean, it wasn't really a vow. Or, I didn't exactly say the right, I mean those words. And in fact, this is what became the legal issue that the Pharisees were then having to decide, or they thought they had to decide this. What words make it absolutely binding, and so the person could be held up on charges before the temple priests for not keeping his vow? What if he didn't actually use the word vow in his sentence? What if he used another expression? What if he wasn't saying, someone says, well, okay, but he said, I swear by the temple. Well, but he didn't use the word vow. He said, I swear by the temple. But so we say, okay, but if you use the words swear by the temple, then that's going to be binding. Well, what if the person says, that doesn't use those words, as he's looking up at the gold of the temple, I swear by the gold of the temple. Well, someone says, well, then that becomes binding, but then if he didn't use the full phrase, if he just said swear by the temple, then it's not binding. And you start just, trying to get real picayune-ish about, okay, what words does a person say that we can just come down and say, okay, you have violated the law, and now we regard you as a lawbreaker, and he's brought up on charges before the priest. And so that's what creates this scenario where finally then, if it's determined by the Pharisees and by the scribes that the actual phrase that we're going to hold you accountable for is, you swear by the gold of the temple. Well, okay, then what do you think people are going to start doing? If they're not quite sure where they really are going to be able to keep this vow, they're going to go in there and they're going to say, I swear by the temple to do this, Well, that kind of gives them a way out. If they can keep their vow, great. If the crops were really good, well, great. But if it turns out the crops aren't that good, well, I didn't actually say swear by the gold of the temple. I said swear by the temple. So it kind of gives them an out. Well, is that what God's law was really trying to create then? Is that when God came up with these votive offerings, was he trying to create a circumstance where a Jew could vow and sometimes it would be binding and other times it wouldn't be? Well, of course not. And that's what Jesus is getting at. He says, you have created a system where you can be people without integrity and you think you're okay. Your yes doesn't mean yes, and your no doesn't mean no. And you're coming up with some technicality to then get out of having to be true to your word. And Jesus says you are fools and blind men. Which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? What's he mean by that statement? Which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? What do you think Jesus means by that statement? Pat? They're trying to be real technical and real picayune-ish, kind of like lawyers do. And guess what the other term for scribe is? Lawyer. The scribes, the lawyers, and the Pharisees. They are trying to get real picayune-ish here, and so Jesus is just getting real picayune-ish back with them. Which is really more important, the temple or the gold of the temple? You're saying if you use the words, I swear to do this by the gold of the temple, I'm obligated. If I swear by the temple, well, I'm not necessarily obligated. Jesus says, my goodness, the temple is what sanctifies the gold and makes the gold holy anyway. So he's, it's kind of like an ad hominem kind of argument where, you're answering a fool back according to his own folly. No. Jesus' ultimate point here is, it doesn't matter what words you use. When you come in the presence of God and you vow to do something, you better keep your word. That's what he's talking about. The other example, whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the offering on it, he is obligated. So that apparently was another one of these little picayune-ish things. I just said I swear by God's altar. And the Pharisees had determined, that isn't explicit enough for us to really bind you with it. But if you say, I swear by this offering I offer now, well, then it's binding. And Jesus says the altar of God is what sanctifies that sheep anyway? And so he's just kind of answering them back with their own kind of logic to show how foolish they are. And he says, you blind men, which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? I meant to bring this evening, and I walked right out of the house and I left it. 46 pages, an English translation of the Jewish tractate from the Mishnah, and it's called Nedarim, and that's the Hebrew word for vows. It's an entire tractate, like a chapter in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is a Jewish writing from about AD 200 that records rabbinic legal decisions and discussions over issues just like this that go back generations. In fact, some of these discussions may go all the way back to the time of Jesus. We're not 100% certain about, you know, each individual one. I was just going to bring it just to show you. I wasn't going to read them all to you or anything. But just imagine a 46-page document here. And the whole thing is, from beginning to end, is legal discussions just like that that's going on as to when a vow is binding and when it isn't. And they are analyzing, well, did the person use the word vow? Nedarim. Well, what if you weren't quite certain if he said the word he said the word Nedarim, and maybe he said Nezarim, which is another Hebrew word. I forget what that Hebrew word meant. And somebody says, well, if he used Nezarim, well, that's binding too, because it's close enough, and so we don't want to quibble about it, you know. Well, then if Nezarim is equivalent to Nedarim, and that's binding, well then, what if you have a word, it's not Nezarim, it's Mezarim, and then it's kind of close to that one, and then how far do you go with all that? 46 pages of all the different legal machinations of when it's binding and when it isn't. It's exactly the same kind of scenarios that Jesus is talking about here. Rabbis were saying, well, on these occasions it's binding, on these occasions, no, it isn't. Jesus is saying, do not swear in this scenario he's talking about, where the only reason why you're swearing is to make it appear that you're telling the truth, when really you don't have any intention of necessarily fulfilling your vow. And if you do swear with the intention of fulfilling your vow, you use these certain words, but on other occasions you don't use those words, so you don't feel obligated, and you just create a situation where you can lie and feel okay about it. And Jesus says, uh-uh, that's not what God was talking about. And I think that's what's going on here in Matthew. So Jesus here in Matthew 23 is condemning this Pharisaic practice of using binding and non-binding oaths. And, of course, James is writing to a Jewish audience. Again, I think you just have to see it's in the same kind of context. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but your yes is to be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. If you've got an environment where the only reason why you feel obligated to keep your word, to be a person of integrity, is if you swear, or swear by that, as opposed to swearing by that, James says, just like Jesus said, don't swear. You be a person where your yes means yes and your no means no. And don't be a person that the only time somebody can be sure you're going to tell the truth is if you join it with a certain oath. Now, you shouldn't need to have an oath to make your words credible. You shouldn't need that if you're a person of honesty and integrity. So let your yes be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. comments or questions upon this before we begin to make some applications? Anybody? Ralph? For the Christians here that James is writing to? I think they are from that same Jewish background. But now, keep in mind this, we're not exactly certain, if you recall from our introduction to the book, we don't know exactly where these Jewish Christians came from that he's writing to. But they would appear to be Greek-speaking Jews, because he writes to them in Greek, not in Aramaic. This was originally written in Greek, which would probably indicate that they're not Palestinian Jews, but somewhere from the diaspora, outside of Palestine. So my point is, they probably were not there when Jesus gave his teaching about these things, you know. And that may be kind of why you're asking this. You know, you might think, well, you know, Jesus already taught on that, so why would these Christians that James is writing to have this problem? Well, you know, they're not necessarily instructed in all those things, or maybe they were, but he's just emphasizing this again. I would think that anyone familiar with Jesus' teaching would certainly be reminded of that by James' admonition here. So, but they are Jews and they come from that background, and so that's what they are used to. Coming to the temple, and there are occasions where your vows are not considered binding, or at least they're not going to press you on it. Other occasions, it is considered binding. And so that's the climate in which they have lived. But now they're Christians, and James is just repeating this teaching of Jesus and saying, listen, you let your yes be yes and your no, no. And it's hard to totally remove that extra baggage from your past and just the way that you think about things. And sometimes even intellectually you know something, but then practically it's hard to really apply that. You need to be reminded and you need to have that reinforced over and over again. I think James is doing that. Dorothy? Seems to me that Jesus and James both are ultimately making a general statement about our integrity. We need to be people who mean what we say, you know, and we're not trying to say it in a way that will make it appear that we're saying something, but then we're let off the hook, you know, whether it's to God or whether it's to men, or you know, in other words, be a person who's completely honest, a person of integrity generally. Go ahead. Our what speech? Slang words? Are you meaning like in curse words or swear? Okay, I didn't hear the last part. Okay, you mean like blasphemous words or that kind of... I don't think that's what this passage is addressing, but of course other passages would be addressing, I think, what you're talking about, where you take God's name in vain, or using language that is foul language, you know, cussing and that kind of thing that isn't befitting someone who's supposed to be a godly person. That's not what this passage is addressing. This passage is addressing honesty, integrity, and not being a duplicitous, you know, a double talker, you know, putting on a front. But certainly what you're talking about, other passages would condemn. Jeremy?
What would you say about when you're
asked? Oh, that's a good question. Jeremy asked, for those of you who can't hear that, he asked, what about a circumstance where we are called upon to appear, say, in the court of this world, and still practice, I think, about every state where you have to make some oath. It may be on a Bible or but before God, and they ask you to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I don't think this passage or the Bible is condemning that. And I know some people will disagree, but that's why I went to the opening passages, because I think we need to make sure we understand this teaching in its entire biblical context. The issue is not that swearing an oath is inherently wrong. I mean, God did it, biblical people did it with God's approval. But the point is to, so if there is an occasion in court where someone is, in order to assure all these people, these non-Christians, that I'm telling the truth, to do what God did in Hebrews 6 and accommodate to that practice and say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, I don't think we should have any problem doing that. And I know some people say, well, you can, the court system gives you an out if you have a problem with saying the word I swear, and you can do what instead? You can use another word. You can say I affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Now, what do you think about that? Kind of almost sounds more Pharisaic, doesn't it? But now let me say this. I am not in any way trying to urge someone to violate their conscience. And I commend people who feel more comfortable in their conscience and would say, I affirm, and not use the word I swear. And I think their motive and their attitude is absolutely righteous and commendable. And their motive is not the motive of the Pharisees to try to get off the hook, and not always be honest. However, if somebody were asking me, as I think you were really ultimately getting at, is that necessary for us to say the words I affirm rather than I swear, as if we say the words I affirm, then it's not an oath? I think it is an oath. It doesn't matter what words you use, in my opinion. But everybody's got to make their own judgment about that. Mickey? I think that's exactly right. And that's the issue here, is you need to be a person of honesty and integrity where people should know, people that know you should be able to have confidence that when you say something, you're not lying. And that needs to be the point. Not that on some occasions you lie and so then you have to, on this occasion, give an oath to let them know you're telling them the truth. Yeah. That doesn't speak well of your character and your integrity. Right?
We have a good example of wanting to put on the oath and answer in Christ himself. When he was before the high priest in Matthew 26:63, he answered under oath.
Yeah, the high priest said, I adjure you before God, tell us whether you are the Christ. And that's what the high priest was doing. You're exactly right. He was saying, before God, under oath, you tell the truth, are you the Messiah or are you not? And what did Jesus say? He said, yes, I am. And he also added something to it, under oath. He said, and you will see the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven and sitting at the right hand of God. Which was a statement not just of his being the Messiah, but he was going to come in judgment. under oath. Jesus was saying that. And he was saying, you're going to experience my judgment. So that's what made the high priest then just rend his garment and say, blasphemer, crucify him. But, but you're exactly right. That's what Jesus was doing. Yeah. Somebody else? I thought raise your hand. Okay. All right. Let's kind of talk a little bit here. We have about 5 minutes here. Let's kind of apply this. I mean, further, we've applied it maybe to the circumstance of if we're called before a court of people giving an oath on that occasion. But, ultimately this teaching is talking about integrity, meaning what you say. And it's talking about the fact that human beings in their societies come up with ways where what you say really doesn't have to be 100% honest in this occasion, and that's okay. And that's what Jesus was condemning, and that's what James is condemning. So what are some other circumstances where in our society, people have come up with some ways where you can be dishonest, or at least if you're dishonest, it's not considered a bad thing, really. What are some ways that in our current society people try to get around this 100% honesty rule? Dwayne? Okay. Situational ethics. In certain situations, these absolute moral principles are not absolute. Yeah. What are some other occasions? Right. Mickey? He may wind up at Joe's house. But he went by Betty Joe's house first or something.
In reality, he's not telling the truth at all. I mean,
you have just indicted me as a teenager. Because that's exactly what I did. Now true confessions here, But let me tell you, and all you young people are laughing, okay, but let me tell you this. I did that, and I justified that in my mind. Where, here's what I did. I kind of altered this a bit. Oh, I went to Joe's house first, was there like 30 seconds, drove in his driveway, and then went wherever else I went. And the whole thing was, I mean, the whole reason why I said that to my mom and dad was, well, I'm going over here, because I didn't want them to know where I was ultimately heading. So I went over there, but then I just, and I don't want to show up hands, but I bet you there's a lot of other people that have done that exact same thing. And here's the thing with that. We convince ourselves that's okay. I did. I was one of these good Christian teenagers. Ray Hamilton, teenager at university. I was one of these good kids. But that's the kind of thing I would do. And I would justify in my own mind, I was a Pharisee. And I didn't realize it. That same kind of just technicality trying to get around God's law and pat yourself on the back and everyone thinks you're really righteous and you're just this wonderful, fine person. But God sees through all that. And that's what I had to learn. That's what the Pharisees needed to learn. That's what these Christians James is writing to needed to learn. Okay. So there are a lot of things like that that we need to think about that we can apply this to. All right, our time is up, so we need to stop. Did somebody raise? Yeah, go ahead, Andrew, while the kids are coming in. If a person promises something and he really doesn't intend to keep his promise, he's making the same mistake here. There are occasions where we promise something and then circumstances prevent us from being able to do it. But when we're not honest in what we promise, that's a sin. Yeah.